From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters. Life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with biochemist Dr. Fuzz Rana, co-author of the book Humans 2.0, Scientific, Philosophical, and Theological Perspectives on Transhumanism. So now let's join Hank Hanegraaff and Fuzz Rana in their conversation.
Because we're made in God's image, God has made us, in a sense, quote-unquote co-creators, right? He's given us a creative capacity that we are to implement to understand the world, to develop technologies. And so as a result of that, we have no choice but to play God. And the real issue is, are we trying to take God's place?
Usurp God.
Right. And so what I see with transhumanism is this is a movement where we're trying to take God's place. I can see using these technologies for medical purposes as we're trying to function in a way that respects the image of God in people and promotes human flourishing. But transhumanism is where we're usurping God. And remember, God gave us dominion over creation except for one part of that creation, human beings. We don't have dominion over human life. That belongs to God.
Yeah, it's just a powerful distinction and a well-written section. One of the ethical considerations that you bring up in the book is the distinction between adult stem cells and their use and embryonic stem cells. And I don't think that can be emphasized enough. We sort of touched on it a few moments ago, but I really think this is an area that bears elaboration, both from a moral standpoint, an ethical standpoint, but also from a practical standpoint. There's a big distinction between embryonic stem cells and how they behave and adult stem cells.
Yeah, well, you know, because a stem cell is just simply a cell that is undifferentiated, that has the potential to develop into particular cell types. So embryonic stem cells can develop into virtually any of the 210 cells that make up the human body. Adult stem cells have limited developmental potential, but one of the things that we've discovered is that many adult stem cells in a laboratory setting can actually develop into a remarkably wide range of different cell types, much more so than people would have initially thought. And the beauty is that adult stem cells are coming from adult tissues. Right? So we're not creating an embryo and destroying it. We're taking the cells from, you know, existing adult tissue versus embryonic stem cells, which have to come from embryos that have been created specifically to isolate the stem cells. So there's a very different, you know, ethical and moral status to those different types of cells. And most of the success that people have had in the clinic is with adult stem cells. It's not with embryonic stem
cells. That's so interesting. That's so interesting because you don't hear about that nearly as much as embryonic stem cells.
Yeah. Well, and there's another type of stem cell that's been invented, if you will. This was maybe a little bit over a decade ago now, but these researchers took a type of cell from the skin. It's called a fibroblast, and they figured out how to convert it into a cell that is like an embryonic stem cell. And so these are called induced pluripotent stem cells. So, you know, a mouthful there, but they are very interesting cells that behave like embryonic stem cells, but are not embryonic stem cells. They come from adult tissues. And in fact, next to adult stem cells, a lot of the work that I see today in stem cell biology is with induced pluripotent stem cells. And what's interesting is that the people that developed this were motivated because of the ethical concerns with embryonic stem cells. So this is a place where the Christian community, in a broad sense, this would include Protestants and Catholics and Orthodox Christians, as well as, you know, people from Judaism, maybe even Islam, voice these ethical concerns with enough force involving embryonic stem cells that there were researchers who may not have otherwise been motivated, realized that if we're really going to make progress with stem cell biology, we've got to sidestep the use of embryos, and were motivated to search for new types of cells like these induced pluripotent stem cells, or were motivated to pursue adult stem cell technology and push it maybe further than people thought it could potentially go. But this is a point where Christians actually, or people of faith maybe is a better way to say this, actually moved the needle in the right direction, right? It doesn't mean that there's still not people pursuing embryonic stem cell work. There are, but there are alternatives now that are not ethically and morally problematic. And I think the lesson to learn from this is that it's so easy to get discouraged when you start seeing things like advances in gene editing, advances in brain-computer interface, advances in anti-aging. I mean, I actively read the scientific literature in these areas. I can't keep up with it. The advances are happening so rapidly, I can't keep up with it. I'm just as surprised as the next person when I read articles about what's been accomplished. And a lot of times it's things that have been accomplished that I never thought would even be possible, you know, even 6 months prior to that. So it's happening so fast that ethicists don't have time to deliberate on the implications of the technology before the next advance happens and the next advance happens. And so it's so easy to get discouraged, you know, when you see this type of thing happening, when you're concerned about the consequences of, you know, gene editing or BCI technology. But I've seen in the past where Christians have engaged our culture in a sophisticated way with their worldview and have influenced the direction that research goes. They have influenced things in a way that is in line with our worldview and our values as Christians. So to me, the worst thing we can do is give up. If we fight the good fight, it's surprising the influence that we can have in the world.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the more brilliant points you made early on in the podcast. We need to get our children and their children involved in the process. Otherwise, the materialists will have the only seats at the table. We need to be represented. The worldview has everything to say about potentiality, even, much less the ethics involved. How about clones? How do clones factor into all of this?
Yeah, well, with transhumanism, I've not seen a ton where people are looking at cloning. In terms of the technology, trying to clone primates, let alone humans, has not been really successful. Even though there were like the UFO cult, the Raelians and their company CloneAid, and some other physicians a couple of decades ago made claims that they had cloned humans. The fact of the matter is, cloning humans for reproductive purposes is right now not even on anybody's radar screen in terms of having the technical capability. Where cloning does factor into this, though, is in the creation of embryos for isolating embryonic stem cells. So people are looking at creating clones through a technique called somatic cell nuclear transfer, where you're taking the nucleus from an adult cell and you're transferring it into an egg cell that has had its nucleus removed. And now you're creating what's called a clonal zygote or a clonal embryo. And some people try to argue, well, because this is an embryo that has not been made through normative reproductive means, it technically doesn't hold the status of as a human. I think that's a very flawed argument. I see it as being a human being. And so cloning does factor into the creation of embryonic stem cells, where people see embryonic stem cell work and human cloning is kind of going hand in hand in that sense. And so this is an area that is, again, deeply problematic. So it would factor into the anti-aging technology in terms of, you know, trying to create embryonic stem cells that you could then implant into the patient who would have donated the genetic material in the first place to make that clonal zygote.
I made a little note in the margin of your book as I was reading, because I wanted to be reminded to ask you about if gene editing is used to produce a high-tech baby, for lack of another moniker, a high-tech baby, isn't that essentially eugenics?
Yes, that's
It's a science of being well-born.
Yes, that's really perceptive. It is a version of eugenics. You know, and this is one of the ethical concerns with using gene editing to treat people with genetic disorders. And by all means, I'm all for exploring aggressively how we can use gene editing to treat genetic disorders. But we could easily move into a regime where we begin to look at people with genetic diseases as somehow being substandard.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with biochemist Dr. Fuzz Rana. Will technology lead us into a brighter tomorrow, or have we already crossed a line? Unprecedented developments in bioengineering, biotechnology, and biomedicine that could improve the lives of people with debilitating diseases and injuries can also serve as stepping stones to technologies that can enhance human beings and alter human nature, raising fears about how biotechnologies could be misused. To receive your copy of Humans 2.0, Scientific, Philosophical, and Theological Perspectives on Transhumanism by Dr. Fuzz Rana with Kenneth R. Samples, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org.
Hank Hanegraaff has dedicated his life to defending truth because truth matters. Yet an encounter with Christians in the underground church of China left Hanegraaff contemplating his Christian experience. They were experiencing something beyond truth. They were experiencing life. Truth Matters, Life Matters More by Hank Hanegraaff is two books in one. Because Truth Matters, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. In Part 2, Hank explains why life matters more and how we can experience the height of human existence, union with God. Prepare to move past intellectually knowing about God to experientially knowing God in Christ. To receive your copy of Truth Matters, Life Matters More, The Unexpected Beauty of an Authentic Christian Life, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.
The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition is the comprehensive collection of the most often asked questions Hank Hanegraaff has received throughout his four decades as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. With more than 500,000 copies already in print, this newly revised and expanded Collector's Edition helps seekers and skeptics alike sort through the truth on topics such as reliability of the Bible, religions and cults, the resurrection and afterlife, and many more issues vital to a better understanding of God in Christ and our relationship to Him. To receive your copy of the Complete Bible Answer Book, Collector's Edition, Revised and Expanded, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org. Winston Churchill once declared, "You may have to fight when there is no hope of victory, because it is better to perish than to live as slaves." Churchill sought to awaken those who were reluctant to fight against the advancing Nazi war machine. Today, a spiritual battle is taking place. Atheism advances in the West, and slavery to secularity is imprisoning more and more hearts and minds in the United States. For this reason, CRI's ministry is critical. But we need people willing to stand for truth, along with the financial provisions to accomplish its mission. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the month of June to end the fiscal year in a position of strength. Call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org, equip.org. Here once again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, biochemist Dr. Fuzz Rana, as they continue their conversation.
If gene editing is used to produce a high-tech baby, isn't that essentially eugenics?
Yes, it is a version of eugenics. And this is one of the ethical concerns with using gene editing to treat people with genetic disorders. And by all means, I'm all for exploring aggressively how we can use gene editing to treat genetic disorders. But we could easily move into a regime where we begin to look at people with genetic diseases as somehow being substandard, as somehow, you know, not having the same value or worth as somebody who is quote unquote genetically healthy. And so then the pressure would be to use the technology to modify your genetic makeup so that you are genetically healthy, right? So you could see this representing a type of genetic discrimination and a high-tech version of eugenics as we move into the future, where, again, people with genetic diseases are going to be marginalized or be viewed as being, again, substandard in some respect. And you could easily...
That's happening in Iceland, right? Where you're basically getting rid of all the Down syndrome babies. There are no incidents, at least said, no incident of Down syndrome babies in Iceland. But the reason is they're all being killed. They're all being aborted.
Yeah, that's a beautiful illustration of the use of technology for eugenics purposes. So you're not discriminating against people based on ethnicity and race, but you're discriminating them on the basis of their genetic makeup, right? And are they viewed as quote unquote healthy or unhealthy from a genetic standpoint? But you could easily envision a future where, you know, the society is such that before a couple reproduces, they have to go through genetic screening if they've identified, you know, particular genetic variants that may make their child susceptible to a genetic disease, that they are forced into in vitro fertilization, where those embryos have to be gene edited, you know, before they could have children, right, to ensure a genetically healthy child. And you could see a scenario where if you didn't agree to do that and you had a child that was genetically defective, that child would be discriminated against, or maybe the family and the child would be denied medical care, you know. And so there's a very real possibility of a type of eugenics emerging from this that is horrifying in many respects.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk about human exceptionalism as you do in the book. How would you make the case for human exceptionalism? And this is all being considered within the purview of technologies producing people that are superhuman or transhuman or human 2.0.
Yeah, well, there's someone that I've had the privilege of debating a couple of times named Peter Clark, who is a transhumanist thinker. And Peter Clark argues that the work in transhumanism completely decimates this idea of human exceptionalism, where he argues that the take-home lesson from transhumanists is that the human condition isn't particularly sacred, right? There's nothing special about us. And so what we do in the book is we actually engage that idea and argue that we can actually make a case that human beings truly are exceptional. And part of that is presenting a scientific argument for the fact that human beings bear God's image, right? And with the idea that really the image of God concept forms the foundation of the Christian ethic that we would use to engage transhumanism and human enhancement technologies. And one of the points that I make is that if you think about it, transhumanism ironically doesn't undermine human exceptionalism, actually demonstrates human exceptionalism, because there's no other creature that has ever lived or currently exists that has the wherewithal to A, understand the world through science, and then to develop technology, and then B, to envision using that technology to take control of quote-unquote evolution, right? To imagine altering themselves through that technology that they create. It's only human beings that are even capable of imagining something like transhumanism. And that in and of itself says that we are distinct and unique and special compared to all other creatures. And that capability appears to be a manifestation of four qualities or four attributes: our ability to represent the world with symbols and then in turn manipulate those symbols in a near infinite number of ways, our theory of mind, where we recognize that others have minds like ours and that we desire to connect with other people with those other minds. And as a result, because of our significant intellect and cognitive capacity, we can structure relationships with other people through very sophisticated societal structures. And it's that combination of properties that seemingly makes human beings unique. You know, it's interesting, Hank, as you're, I'm sure, well aware, you know, Darwin's idea that we only differ in degree, not kind, from other creatures has shaped the science of anthropology for 150, 170 years. And there is a growing minority of anthropologists who are thoroughly entrenched in an evolutionary framework, who wouldn't necessarily align with the Christian worldview in any way, shape, or form, who are actually arguing Darwin was wrong, that human beings actually differ in kind, not degree, from other creatures, that we actually stand apart. And the attributes that they think makes us exceptional, you could see as maybe scientific descriptors of how we would understand the image of God, or at least how some Christians would understand the image of God. And so by taking advantage of this idea of human exceptionalism that's emerging as a scientific idea, connecting it to the image of God, we can actually show that it's scientifically reasonable to think that humans bear God's image and that we are justified in building an ethical system around that concept. But it also means that this idea that transhumanism is somehow undermining human exceptionalism is really a very weak argument.
Yeah, and you mentioned Neanderthals in this regard with respect to a weak argument. I mean, that argument is used by the materialist, saying that we really are not exceptional.
Yeah, so to me, it felt like it was worth spending time in the book really justifying the image of God concept, that it's not just simply a position we're taking on faith as Christians, but it's a position that we can take that has scientific credibility. You know, maybe it's not proved or demonstrated scientifically, but it has scientific credibility because of this idea of human exceptionalism, and that it's now becomes a legitimate framework to create an ethical system that can engage, you know, ideas like transhumanism.
Yep. Talk about the origin of language in relation to human exceptionalism.
Yeah, well, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's our capacity for symbolism that really causes us to stand apart. And symbolism simply means that we are able as human beings uniquely to represent the world in symbols. And then we can combine and recombine those symbols in a variety of ways. That's essentially the basis for language. It's the basis for music. It's the basis for art. And I see that as really being emblematic of the image of God. And what's interesting is that evolutionary biologists cannot explain the origin of language, right? That every approach that has been taken to try to come up with an evolutionary model to explain how language could evolve from just simply animal communication falls short. And it's also interesting that when humans appear on the scene, modern humans, us, when we appear on the scene, the evidence for symbolism in the archaeological record shows up suddenly out of nowhere. Sometimes this is referred to as the sociocultural Big Bang by anthropologists. So it looks like when humans appear, right away there's something different about us that causes us to stand out. And, you know, it's interesting because of our capacity for language, and this is a point that atheists who are anthropologists make, not me, that because of our capacity for language, that even though our technology began, you know, quote unquote, in primitive form, within a relatively short period of time, we've put people on the moon. We're now contemplating, you know, taking control of evolution, quote unquote, to evolve post-human species. Whereas creatures like Neanderthals had technology, but it was static. It never changed. And so the point would be there's got to be something different. And the argument is that that difference is our language capacity. And I would argue that that is really a reflection of the fact that we bear God's image, and even Neanderthals did not.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with biochemist Dr. Fuzz Rana. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of Humans 2.0, Scientific, Philosophical, and Theological Perspectives on Transhumanism by Dr. Fuzz Rana with Kenneth R. Samples. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. Once again, that's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more.
Truth Matters, Life Matters More by Hank Hanegraaff is essentially two books in one. Because Truth Matters, Part 1 equips Christians to defend the essential truths of the historic Christian faith. In Part 2, Hank explains why life matters more and how we can experience the height of human existence, union with God in Christ. Simply put, the map is not the territory, the menu is not the meal. We cheat ourselves of authentic union with Christ when we elevate the message above the Messiah. Truth Matters, Life Matters More is a modern classic and the magnum opus of one of the great theological minds of our time. To receive Truth Matters, Life Matters More, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift in support of the life-changing work of the Christian Research Institute. That's 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org.